From Luminary and Built It Productions, it's Wisdom from the Top. Stories of crisis, failure, turnaround, and triumph from some of the greatest leaders in the world. I'm Guy Raz, and on the show today, the story of Greg Wasson, former CEO of Walgreens.
I mean, anybody in their right mind might think, hey, some of these decisions, you know, they may not turn out the way you'd like to, but I didn't entertain that thought. I think that we are doing the absolute right thing for this company and our shareholders and our employees. And if indeed it's not, and, you know, there's personal risk, so be it.
How a young Midwestern pharmacy student joined Walgreens as an intern and climbed all the way to the top of the company.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Greg Wasson had a pretty modest professional dream. He wanted to own his own pharmacy in his hometown of Monticello, Indiana, population 5,378. So he studied hard, he got into Purdue University, where he trained to become a pharmacist, and he started to pursue that dream. Except his life kind of took an unexpected turn when he got recruited to do an internship at Walgreens. And Greg would go on to spend the rest of his professional career at the company, eventually becoming its CEO. And it was in that role where he realized that for him, being CEO meant being the company's chief communicator, which he'll talk about a little later. But for now, all you need to know is that Greg grew up, as I mentioned, in rural Indiana, where he was the middle child of five kids.
My dad was a salesman of, home improvements, and he opened and operated a campground on the side. We helped run the campground for, through high school and, through some of the early college years.
Wow.
So we learned how to work hard and had a lot of fun. Frankly, the campground that we owned and operated in, I tell people it was almost like on weekends in the summers, going to a summer camp every weekend, because we had, instead of going somewhere, we had kids showed up every weekend, and we were always able to get a ball game going or something. Obviously, in the Hoosier State, I grew up playing basketball just as often as I possibly could. But and I think about my dad, and certainly who's 89 still.
Wow.
Still with us. My mom passed this past April, but he was probably one of my earliest business mentors. I can still recall him saying, "Hey, Greg, with the campground, what we need to do is find something people desire, price it fairly, and service the heck out of them." And business may not be that simple, but certainly those are three key, important points.
Yeah. So neither of your parents had college degrees, right?
No.
And when you were growing up, was that an expectation that you would go to college?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think certainly it was encouraged. And the challenge was we didn't have, the resources. So I did get a college loan, and paid it off over 10 years. But we were always encouraged. It wasn't easy. I joke that I had two great uncles who were pharmacists and drove big Cadillacs. So I decided to enter pre-pharmacy school and started there.
Yeah. So you go off to Purdue.
Yeah.
And you decide to study pharmacy to become a pharmacy student because you had these relatives who drove Cadillacs and were pharmacists. So you thought, well, maybe I can get a Cadillac. But that was really the reason. I mean, it was that simple.
Well, it really wasn't that simple. It was they were my first introduction to the profession of pharmacy for sure.
Yeah.
I joke about the fact that they drove Cadillacs, but certainly I was good in school. I worked hard during high school. I was good in math and science. Purdue was close, and Purdue had one of the top pharmacy programs in the nation at the time. And I always did want to go into business. And back in the early 80s, late 70s, community pharmacists, independent pharmacies were predominant. And so my goal was to go through pharmacy school and own my own pharmacy.
Yeah. So while you were at Purdue, I guess you – I mean already as a student, you started to do internships at Walgreens, like as – before you even graduated. Is that right?
Yes, I did. There happened to be a Purdue alumni that was running, what was called then the Pharmacy Services Department within Walgreens in Deerfield, and he tapped me on the shoulder and spent a summer as an intern with the Walgreens corporate office in Deerfield, learning more about retail pharmacy and the business itself.
And it sounds like that was it. I mean, if we go back in time and I would have told you in 1981 that this was going to be your career, your life's career, would you have believed it?
No, not at all. The advice I actually got from my mentor, a guy named Bill Hatfield, that summer was, Greg, hey, we understand you want to own and operate your own drugstore. Go move to Houston, Texas when you graduate. At the time, Walgreens had, I think, 30 stores in Houston. They just made an acquisition of another 25 or so. And they're going to need manpower. They're going to need management. You could get ahead quickly and learn how to manage and run a drugstore on our dime. You can either, after a few years go, try to run your own or you stay with us. And 35 years later.
But that was the idea. The idea was, look, I want to be an entrepreneur / pharmacist. I want to have my own store. It'll be in an independent store. And this was your idea, I'll go to Walgreens, I'll learn the business, but then I'll go off and start my own little store.
Absolutely. And my wife and I got married, moved to Houston, Texas, and we started working. My wife's a pharmacist as well. I met her in pharmacy school. And about 3 months later, I was managing my own drugstore. I tell people I didn't even know what all we carried yet at the time, let alone how to manage a store.
Yeah.
And good things just continue to happen. So I moved at the right time. It was a bold move for my wife and I to leave home and move, 1,500, 2,000 miles away. I ran one store and must have done okay and was presented a second store and a third store and a fourth store. And so back to your original question, did I know in 1981 that I wanted to be the CEO of the Walgreens company? No. I wanted to run a drugstore and be an entrepreneur. And at the time, back then, the local pharmacist was somewhat like the mayor of town.
Of course.
Everybody knew you. You knew everybody.
Sure.
So, no, I had no I don't think I even really knew what it meant to be a corporate executive at the time.
Yeah. I mean, you go to business school. You weren't even on that track. It sounds like you really were committed to actually being a pharmacist. It sounds like you really never got a chance to be a pharmacist.
Well, yeah, exactly. So with Walgreens, I went straight into store management, and actually, back then you would work a shift or two in the pharmacy, but most of the time I was out managing the store. So I really never spent full time as a pharmacist, but it definitely gave me, I think, as an advantage of understanding the profession as it did climb the corporate ladder.
You would eventually move to Boston to manage three states for Walgreens up there. And still pretty, pretty young guy. And now you're sort of early 30s. And I guess after, several years there, you were asked to sort of move to Las Vegas and help manage the rollout there. And you initially said, no, I don't want to do it.
So I'd been in Boston 7 years and we had met friends, and it's the longest I'd ever lived in any one place. And when I was offered the Las Vegas market and the opportunity to go out and open it, I thought about, the move and did we really want to at the time. And – It was probably a couple months later, my wife and I and girls were headed toward, you know, northern Vermont on a ski trip, and the girls were had finally fallen asleep in the back of the car. And I mentioned it to my wife, and there was a pause, and she said, you know what, Greg, it's probably inevitable that we're going to move. Why don't you take that opportunity? So we up and moved, you know, with two young daughters to Las Vegas and opened the market from scratch, and it was an exciting time.
This was in the early 90s. It sounds like, from what I've read, Las Vegas would become a turning point in your career, because at that point you were a manager, and obviously you know there were people who knew you in sort of corporate headquarters. But it sounds like Las Vegas really your visibility increased with that position. What happened in Las Vegas to kind of make your star rise?
I would agree with that. And I think it was the mid-90s, I think 96 to 99, Vegas was growing you know, rapidly at the time. So that helped. But
Because Walgreens was not in Las Vegas.
That's right.
So you were introducing this brand to a brand new community.
Exactly. So we opened a handful of stores, you know, in early 96, and it was just a fast-growing market. We were bringing in experienced managers as the nucleus to build upon. We had the freedom to do unique things that were unique to the market. I'll give you one example. One night, my wife and I are coming home from dinner, and I'm sitting at an intersection with one of our existing stores that closed at 10 o'clock. And it's about 10:30, and there are just cars lined up in every direction in front of the store, and we're dark. So it hit me. Why not brand Walgreens as, you know, Las Vegas open 24 hours? And we did. And, you know, the market took off like a rocket.
Wow. So that single switch to 24 hours, what became this turning point?
It was probably not that one thing. I think that was certainly a big part of it. The fact that we had good locations, we were getting there early, we had good people, we got into all of the pharmacy networks, you know, early on. But I do think if I were to think of one pivotal action, you know, taking the first 10, 12 drugstores 24 hours, I think definitely set us apart from everyone else in the town.
I think many Walgreens across the country today are 24 hours. Were they at that time?
Yeah, we had 24-hour stores at the time. This was just a fact that, you know, a third of the workforce in Las Vegas at the time, if I recall, worked overnight.
Right.
Yeah, and we were closed. So it was an exciting time and paid off for us.
So that role really kind of increased your visibility within the company. And it seems like at that point, you know, 1999, there were people who sort of saw you as maybe a potential leader of the company. Do you think that you saw in yourself the potential to be the CEO of the company at that point in the late 90s? Did you think, you know, I think I can run this place?
I think the thing I learned is that I really loved the innovative part of running drugstores and trying to figure out ways to grow the business. But I always focused on every single role I was in. You know, every role I was in, I just tried to be the best that I could possibly be, enjoy what I was doing, and frankly, good things just continued to happen for me.
Yeah.
Now, had I not been given that Vegas market opportunity, and maybe if I'd have gone to another market or stayed in Boston, maybe I would not have gotten, you know, the visibility or been noticed. But I was focused on, you know, one of my friends was opening up a market in the Northwest, and someone was opening up the Dallas market, and we were too busy competing with each other to try to open the best new market, you know, that we could possibly open.
You know, I'm curious because within 10 years of your success in Las Vegas, you were named the CEO, of course. But, you know, I think about where you grew up, right? This small town. And it's a little bit of a stereotype, but there's sort of a Midwestern modesty, right? Wonder, you know, becoming a corporate CEO, I mean, there's this idea that you got to have sharp elbows and you got to play office politics and you got to fight and claw for that position. It's a greasy pole. But you don't strike me as the kind of person who had a whole lot of interest in that kind of fight.
Yeah. And did I desire, for the next opportunity that would be, after that? Yes, but I just didn't get caught up in it. And I think part of it was I grew up with modest, with a modest childhood. And frankly, by the time I'd become a regional vice president, I had succeeded.
Beyond anyone's.
Beyond what I thought possible.
Yeah. All right. So 2009, you are named CEO of Walgreens. Your predecessor had resigned after just 2 years on the job. It was a tough moment at Walgreens because the company had tried to bid on Long's Drugs. It lost that bid to CVS, a huge rival, right? So it's 500 stores, drug stores that CVS picked up on the West Coast. I remember that. I remember all those Long's Drugs turning into CVS. I mean, in some ways, a really bad time to take over, but I guess in some ways a good time because there really was nowhere else except to go up, right?
Well, yeah, I think, I think it was both a fortunate and unfortunate time, I guess, to your point. We would come off of that failed transaction, I guess I would call it, and then coming out of the Great Recession, right? So one of the first things we did as an executive team is, step back and try to understand what, does the future look like? We had a very successful strategy for nearly two decades of, finding the best corners in America, signing good, fair, long-term leases, and opening stores and running them with excellence. Say, okay, how long of a runway do we have? How many more stores can we open in America? And then as we looked up and we had, 7,000, 7,500 drugstores in all 50 states at the time, we had to step back and say, okay, if we open more, do we cannibalize existing stores? And that's when, we made the decision that, with e-commerce, coming on as it was, we didn't have the runway to open stores at the pace we had.
Yeah.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Generative AI is not a one-size-fits-all. If you're powering a customer chat experience, you need instant speed at low cost. If you're doing complex R&D or advanced analysis, you need frontier intelligence. The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic offers a model for every task and budget. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between speed and skill. And Haiku is the fastest and most cost-effective model on the market. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to power their AI solutions. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
You're taking over a company that obviously had pretty good fundamentals, but you are now... You have the keys to the kingdom, right? You can do all kinds of things. And for the average consumer, CVS, Walgreens, there's not a whole lot that can be differentiated. what was your idea for how you were going to make Walgreens different? For how are you going to pull the CVS customer into Walgreens?
Yeah, and it took a while to work through that and figure that out, frankly. The first was, okay, what can we do with the front end? You know, we know that there is a growing health and wellness trend within the country. So what we tried to do with the front end was to transform it into more of a wellness center. Second, and this was probably one of the biggies, was we wanted to make sure that we advanced the role that community pharmacy could play in healthcare. Pharmacists, have been one of the most accessible and trusted healthcare professionals in the country.
Sure.
You know, we felt, and I felt, that we could expand the services and provide things like immunizations and vaccinations and so forth and others. And so we wanted to make sure that we moved more from a community pharmacy to a community healthcare provider. And then the third strategy was, if indeed we found an international partner that we felt was a good choice, then we would look at potentially becoming international.
One of your first major decisions, which I think at that point the biggest thing that Walgreens had ever done, was to acquire Duane Reade, the drugstore chain in New York. I think this was the biggest acquisition, right, that Walgreens had made at that point.
I think it was. And and we had looked at that chain over the years, and certainly Duane Reade was a strong brand, been in operation, I think, since the 50s. Had several locations, obviously throughout Manhattan and the five boroughs. And I remember talking to my board, my executive team at one time, and saying, you know, it could take us, multiple generations to organically open this number of locations and get a real presence in New York. And I give credit to, I forget the private equity group. I think it might have been Oak Hill had taken Duane Reade private and brought in a management team. And they had done some really neat things with Duane Reade in the locations that they had remodeled and brought in some services. And I really liked where they were going with their concept. In fact, I can recall talking to my executive team after having spent a weekend kind of incognito with baseball caps and sunglasses and so forth on in their stores and ours. I came back and said, Duane Reade's got something here. They're kind of stepping out of the traditional drugstore model and leaving the rest of us behind to compete in the same model. And we could not only gain a real presence in the Northeast by looking at this at them, but also, some real innovation that we could possibly pull back through the rest of our chain. And that's ultimately what we did.
So, there are obviously all kinds of leaders, right? There are charismatic leaders or quiet leaders. I'm wondering, did you find that you had to be charismatic or because I mean, there is something about being Midwestern and modest that sometimes comes into conflict with being charismatic, right? I mean, being charismatic can be seen as also being, a bit of a show off.
Yeah. I always thought of myself and tried to come across with humble confidence or confident humility.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are days, I think, with any leader where there's some anxious moments and some, you've got some sleepless nights. And those were the times that, frankly, I left the corporate office and went out and visited drugstores and spent time in the field with our people and our distribution centers, our stores, because I got energized from them. Our people, frankly, had a can-do attitude. And, I may be down the dumps or trying to figure something out, and I'd get out there and get energized. We had 250,000 smart people across the United States. And someone out there may just have the answer to one of our questions or a solution to a problem we're wrestling with. We just have to get out there and give them the opportunity to present it to us. And if you're sitting in a corporate office, you're not going to be able to get out there and potentially learn that from someone out there.
All right. Let me ask you here. 2011, Walgreens, you had this partnership with a company called Express Scripts, and this was a huge business for you. I think it was like $5 billion in annual sales. It was a way for people to fill their prescriptions at Walgreens. And in 2011, you couldn't come to terms to renew the deal because they wanted a greater share of the profit. And that was, I'm assuming, that was what the dispute was over. They also worked with other big companies.
Yes. You know, and obviously we wanted a fair reimbursement for the services you provide.
Sure.
And, you know, we had the opportunity to work with others, you know, who valued, you know, what we were providing. And that's where our focus was.
And they left, and this had a huge impact on the bottom line. Like, your Walgreens sales suffered, and I'm sure this is a very complicated story with a complicated negotiation. But you took heat for kind of holding firm on this, for saying, "Look, we're not." I'm assuming that the terms that they wanted were terms that you just didn't find acceptable.
Yeah, it was, you know, there are probably times in every leader's, you know, tenure, whether it's a CEO or whoever it might be, that you're going to have big decisions like that. And and those are the times where they may come with personal risk.
Yeah.
And you have to set that aside. And so, yeah, that was a big decision. You know, certainly we took a stand. You know, we thought it was absolutely in the best interest of the company and our shareholders.
I mean, just to put this into context, I think Express Scripts, when the deal fell apart, they walked away with 88 million annual prescriptions. So it was like a subscription service, essentially, that they walked away with all these customers. It's a big decision to make. I'm assuming that you just felt like what they were asking for was unfair.
So at the time, you know, we did not feel that it made sense to fill those prescriptions at what was being offered, and we took that stand. And it was you know, a stand not only for our company, but, you know, to some degree for the entire industry.
Yeah. Analysts estimated that the dispute cost Walgreens about $4 billion in annual revenue. And obviously, as you remember, it set off a steep decline in the share price of Walgreens. It would be resolved in about a year, but during that time, do you remember what life was like for you personally? It cannot have been easy.
No, again, any big decision like that, they aren't easy. But you know, then you have to really step up and be a leader, and make sure that, you know, you're communicating the why as much as the how or the what. And so I spent an enormous amount of time communicating with all stakeholders as to the why and what we're doing, you know, to offset it, to keep people, you know, confident and engaged. Mm-hmm. And so I always have felt over the course of my career that, you know, people want to understand the why behind something as much as the what or the how. Mm-hmm. And they may not always agree with what you're doing, but at least if they understand the why, then, you know, they'll have a little bit more tendency to give you, you know, a little more support and a little more
slack.
Sure. Slack.
And were you ever worried, Greg, that you would be, I don't know, but the board would fire you?
I can honestly say never. And now, does that mean I didn't think that there could be repercussions? No, I mean, anybody, you know, in the right mind might think, hey, some of these decisions when you have to make a big stand, you know, they may not turn out the way you'd like to. But I guess what I really would say is I didn't entertain that thought. I just didn't. I never have. And never did. It goes back to my upbringing, I think, the fact that, look, I think that we are doing the absolute right thing for this company and our shareholders and our employees. And, you know, if indeed it's not, and, you know, there's personal risk, that so be it. You know, I can go back to farming and help and find a campground in Indiana to run if I have to.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. You could run a campground in Indiana. All right. So you get through this, and you eventually in 2012, Walgreens and Express Scripts do come to an agreement to bring the two businesses back together. But probably the most momentous, I mean, you had three huge sort of momentous and very public experiences, Duane Reade, the acquisition, and then this thing with Express Scripts. And the third, probably the most important, the biggest, was the decision to enter into a strategic partnership with Alliance Boots, which was an overseas pharmacy. Many, many people have been to Boots, the chemist in the UK and in Ireland. 2012, Walgreens decides to buy a 45% stake in Alliance Boots. Tell me a little bit about that idea and why that made sense at the time.
Well, yeah, and I'll go all the way back to when I first became CEO in 2009. I think it might have been late 2009, early 2010. Suggestion from one of my executive leaders was, there's a lot of innovation that's going on around the world with other retailers. You know, it's not all happening within Walgreens. And, why don't we put a small team together and let's go around the world and let's look at what's going on with some of the more innovative retailers out there. And, Japan, and I think they ended up going into Bangkok and just all over, just looking at, just creative, innovative retailers. And we ended up in the UK in the last 2 or 3 days and spent time with Boots. And and we kept coming back to, this is a great, drugstore founded in 1863 by Jesse Boot, and would be a good fit with a lot of opportunity for the two.
And this was essentially a gigantic international merger, like a very large and complex deal, like 13 or 14,000 stores in 27 countries, I guess. But it was also a very public merger, right? Because Walgreens is obviously well known to U.S. consumers. There were, as you know, lots of stories in the news about Walgreens like moving their headquarters overseas to avoid taxes, which you resisted. But then toward the end of the merger in like 2014, there were accounts, news accounts that powerful investors would not approve the deal until you stepped down as CEO, which you eventually did. I mean, presumably you felt pressure to do so. I mean, were you essentially forced out?
I felt that at the time, we had the opportunity to bring together the two companies to create the largest platform in the country.
Yeah.
When we did that in December of 14, completed step two, that's when I figured, to use one of my old executive's lines, my work was done. And I decided that that was a good opportunity for me to retire. Mm-hmm. Certainly there were those who had opinions of the second step and the timing of the second step and how it should be done and so forth. But, my decision was based on we brought the platform together and it was the right time.
Hmm. I don't know. Did you feel, you've been there your whole career. You started there as a college student. One day you're the CEO and you're employed by Walgreens and the next day you're not. That was your entire professional identity for 30 years, right? Was it hard to leave?
I never started out, with the desire to become the CEO of a large public company.
Yeah.
I was Greg, who happened to become the CEO. And so yeah. I never let it become my true identity. Did I think of Walgreens as family and had tremendous relationships with the company? Yes, yeah, still do. But, I had the very fortunate opportunity to have retired after 35 years at still a relatively young age and now create my next chapter. And I think it goes all the way back to my days in Las Vegas and my days of running Walgreens Health Service and so forth. Every CEO has to drive execution and results. But I think what most enjoy are trying to find ways to grow companies. And the way you grow your large companies today is through innovation. Hmm. And that's what I really enjoy. So, while I had, a 35-year first career that I absolutely loved and exceeded beyond my wildest dreams and was able to put an incredible global platform together, I now have had the opportunity in the last 4 years to work with my family and create some new innovative, businesses that we are co-founders of.
Greg, I've read that you consider yourself an instinct-driven leader, right? Mm-hmm. That you actually prefer to follow your instincts rather than allowing data to drive your decision-making. There are people who are the reverse. They focus on data, and data is what drives their decision-making. Tell me a little bit about why you think instinct is sort of the way to make decisions.
I like to think that I'm an instinct-led but data-supported leader. And, you know, data obviously is important in any decision you're making. But I think that, you know, leaders do have instincts, you know, and those instincts are based on years of experience and being in the business and that drive those instincts. But at the same time, I think that I just like to use data to either validate or invalidate in my instincts. I will say probably earlier in the year, I probably didn't value the data as much as I did in my later years, frankly, because there was so much more data that became available.
When you think about your role as CEO, now that you're sort of, you have a chance to kind of reflect on it and look at it from the balcony and evaluate other CEOs. I know you serve on boards, or you have served on boards. What do you think the role of a CEO is? What do you think the role of a CEO ultimately needs to be?
Yeah, I think they need to be someone that the stakeholders of the company respect and have confidence in the trajectory and the position and the direction that they want to take a company. And I think you have to be able to see around corners and see over horizons. And I think you're really the key strategist of the company. And to be that, you need great people that are helping you determine and decide what that should be. But you also need the confidence of all stakeholders, especially employees, to come along with you on that journey.
Some of the leaders I've interviewed have described leadership as being the ultimate cheerleader, that actually your job is to set an overall vision, but really to allow others to execute and implement it. But to do that, you have to really inspire people by cheering them on. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, it does. I remember my oldest daughter one time asking me what my job was, and I said, you know, I'm the chief communicator because 95% of what I do is communicate, and what I mean by that means once you set a course and once your key people decide on the direction of the company, then you really become a salesman, so to speak, to try to to help people understand and get on board and support that. Yeah, you have to shout from the mountaintops. You have to help people understand. You have to listen. You have to, you know, shift direction sometimes based on that. But you really have to become the chief communicator.
Do you think you were born a leader, or do you think you learned how to become a leader?
Good question. My mother used to say all the time that, hey, Greg could be president of the United States if he wanted to be someday. But so she must have seen something. Yeah. I will say this. I think I worked hard at everything I did, even as a kid. And whether it was working hard with my dad in the campground or the local farmer out in the fields, or even with my studies. And I'd come home every night. And if I needed to spend a couple hours doing my homework, that was the first thing I did. And then I went out and played ball. So I think I probably earned a degree of respect, as a kid. But I wouldn't say I was the type that was, carrying the torch and everybody was following, because of who I was. But if I look back, I think I earned respect because of my work ethic.
Final question for you. Do you think that Walgreens benefited from the Washington Nationals winning the World Series?
Because of the logo?
Because of the logo, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, guy. I wouldn't mind seeing the lift or not if because of that. But it might have.
That's Greg Wasson, former CEO of Walgreens. Greg now serves on several boards, and he and his wife Kim founded Watson Enterprise, a Chicago-based angel investment firm. Hey, thanks for listening to the show this week. The music for this episode was composed and performed by Drop Electric. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to Wisdom from the Top from Luminary and Built It Productions.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.